Welcome to Season 4 of the Flight Science Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Sullivan. In this series, we are bringing our focus to one of the most exciting and emerging areas of nutrition science, gut health. We all have an understanding of how our genetics and lifestyle choices can determine our health. However, in recent years, much attention has been given to how the foods we eat, activity we do, and lives we lead can alter the bacteria in our gut, which can have a profound effect on both our physical and mental health. To help us explore this topic, I've invited some of the world's top researchers and practitioners in this space to help us better understand how to optimize our gut. Today, our guest is Dr. Jim Kantadarkis. Dr. Jim is a clinical psychologist and hypnotherapist and has over 12 years clinical expertise in the area of psychogastroenterology. He was the first psychologist in Australia to specialize in the psychological / hypnotherapy treatment of individuals diagnosed with gastrointestinal problems. Jim was also the first Australian to travel and undergo training from a leading gastroenterologist, Professor Warwell, and the founding gut-directed hypnotherapy team in Manchester, United Kingdom. Jim's passion and keen interest in gastroenterology has inspired him to develop and train his own team of gastrointestinal psychologists and hypnotherapists in his own practice, the Gut Centre. The Gut Centre has multiple locations across Melbourne and now has clinics in Sydney and Brisbane. Jim is also involved in St. Vincent's Hospital Functional Gut Clinic as the clinical psychologist and gut-directed hypnotherapist. Jim has strong links with world-leading gastroenterologists in Australia and the United States and has recently returned from the US where he visited GI clinics across six states exploring the latest developments in psychogastroenterology research and practice. Jim has been invited to present at seven gastrointestinal conferences and events and host the Talking Gut with Dr. Jim Kantadarkis podcast, where he talks with world leaders in gastroenterology and related systems. This is a really informative episode, so let's get to it. And green light means we are live, so here for another episode of the Fight Science Podcast. Now, this is probably an episode that I have looked forward to in all four seasons the most in the entire life of the podcast. Now I'm joined by Australia's own Dr. Jim Kantadarkis. Now, Dr. Jim, thanks for coming on. I appreciate you taking the time.
My absolute pleasure. Thank you for the invitation.
Now, Dr. Jim, I'll let you explain what you do, but you're a clinical psychologist and a hypnotherapist, and you specialize in the field of psychogastroenterology. Now, for the listeners at home, can you give us a bit of a breakdown of what is that field and how did you find yourself getting into that?
It's a fairly newly sort of defined area, psychogastroenterology, but it's nothing really new. So essentially what psychogastroenterology means is that it's a very specialized area of gastroenterology that looks at using psychological therapies to help treat individuals that have gastrointestinal problems using psychological therapies. And you know, I'm going to put it out now because it's very important that I get this out straight away. And this is what I do with all my patients when they first come in. It does not mean that you know we think, or I'd like to think that the gastroenterologists think that this is all in your head, or that stress or anxiety is a cause of these gut problems like IBS. It's not. But through the brain gut axis, which we can talk about, essentially the brain affects the gut and the gut affects the brain, so the communication is bidirectional. So psychogastroenterology basically involves utilizing these psychological therapies in order to help people reduce the symptoms, like people that have IBS, but also to manage the distress or the anxiety and depression that comes from having these symptoms like pain, bloating, or, you know, severe diarrhea or severe constipation. So that's sort of the area. Now, in terms of how I got involved in this area, well, it's a really long-winded story. But my history goes back when I was a radiographer many years ago, working in hospitals and, you know, being involved in gastroenterology through that area. And, you know, psychology sort of stood out to me. But I always had an interest in chronic illness and chronic conditions that, you know, people are affected by and how they cope with it. And I had the opportunity to go back and do, you know, sort of doctoral study, and that study and that thesis involved looking at inflammatory bowel disease, which is Crohn's and ulcerative colitis, which is an autoimmune inflammatory condition. And it just, you know, I just became so fascinated by how much the brain affects the gut and vice versa. And that was it. I was just hooked. And I was fortunate enough in the early days to be linked up with Professor Peter Warwell, who is a gastroenterologist within Shaw Hospital in Manchester. And he was the gastroenterologist who basically invented or developed gut-directed hypnotherapy over 20 years ago. And so I was very lucky and fortunate to sort of go up there and spend some time with him and his team and do some training. And that was it. I've just been hooked ever since. I mean, you know, the benefits of this treatment are remarkable. And therefore, you know, it's so wonderful to work in an area which is really fascinating and interesting, which we'll delve further into if you like. But we actually get to see really good improvements in you know, in terms of reduction in their symptoms, you know, in a number of weeks. People that have had these problems for years and years, and I kid you not, years, up to 20 years, and, you know, they can have, you know, 4, 6, maybe 8 hypnotherapy sessions over 8 weeks, and their symptoms significantly reduce, which is really remarkable. And, I mean, there's so much I could talk about, but I don't want to just keep sort of throwing out all the detail out there. So I'll let you ask the questions and I'll answer them if you like, but I could just talk on forever about this sort of thing.
A big reason why I was so excited to talk to you, I remember when I was reading your background, doing a bit of research on you, and I thought, man, this is fantastic, because I'm very fortunate enough. I get to work with some very, very elite level combat sport athletes in my field. And one of the most common things that I've found that has been one of the biggest, most direct impacts on their performance is when my top five guys, they've all went and saw the same sports psychologist, and they all talk about how important that has been to their overall performance. And they're not discrediting their strength conditioning or skills training or nutrition, but they said this sports psychology just almost made them emphasize the benefits of all those other things. And it's really got me interested in this field. And as you said, it's probably exactly the same for the gut with all those symptoms. Now, Dr. Jim, before we get in deep dive into the exacts of what you do, I've been asking all the guests that have come on for the Gut Health series, I know this is a bit of a hard question to answer, but can you explain in your words, what is meant by gut health?
It's a really good question. And because there are so many factors to the gut, I don't think that there is one single thing, to be perfectly honest. And, you know, gut health could be looked at from the perspective of, you know, doing the right, you know, when you're not doing the right things, eating correctly, managing stress, et cetera, it's going to have a negative effect on your gut. So I would say gut health means kind of living in harmony or a state of homeostasis with the environment. And I think that that's the way I would explain it. So what that means is our gut is influenced by the environment, internal and external. Obviously the foods that we eat, you know, microbes and bugs and bacteria that we're interacting with through the environment or the transmission through other people, but also stress. And I think gut health is really kind of looking at all those areas and focusing on all those areas to some degree. And if you're, you know, if your diet's really good, then you might be managing the stress levels or, you know, or building an immune system or having a really good immune system. But I would say, to summarize it, I would say gut health is about, you know, creating a sustaining state of homeostasis with the environment. That's how I would.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant. And we touched on this just briefly before in your first explanation, the gut-brain axis. Can you explain to the listeners what the gut-brain axis actually is?
Sure. I'll tell you how it evolves and then you'll get a picture of what it is. And unfortunately, people can't really, I usually show my patients when I explain the brain gut axis a little sort of an example with my finger, with my sort of index finger bent. And I sort of show, you'll be able to see it. And I usually show that, you know, the brain and the gut essentially evolve from the same area of tissue in the embryo. So when we're in a fetus, very small. And as the embryo of the fetus grows, the brain goes up to one end. The majority of the digestive system goes down the other end, so your stomach, your intestines, and your bowels. Now, that is the other end of your body. Your legs are like your arms, they're extremities. They're not really the core part of your body. And during that process where they're sort of, in a way, separating, there are neurons or brain cells that actually migrate down to the gut to develop what we call the enteric nervous system. So the gut has its own nervous system. It doesn't need the brain to function. It can work independently of it. And the two are connected via what's called the vagus nerve. So essentially, because of that communication, the brain is connected to our gut and our gut is connected to our brain. And that communication, we know, is bidirectional. Okay, so that's really important. But yes, you know, the gut is constantly sending signals up to our brain and, you know, like, oh, you know, rumbling tummy, I've got to eat, or, you know, I'm experiencing pain. But, you know, the communication also works in the other direction where we're getting stressed, anxious, et cetera, can have that negative effect or that effect on the gut as well. So the communication is bi-directional. What's fascinating, and that's essentially what the brain-gut axis is, it's the brain-gut communication between the two systems. But I should say, because people might be thinking, well, you know, in terms of how I say the gut's moving down the other end, your gut or your gastrointestinal tract is your mouth all the way down to your rectum. So I just want to make that clear that it's not just your intestines. So essentially that's what the brain-gut axis is. And, you know, people sort of talk about, you know, and we talk about stress and I mentioned it, you know, our emotional brain is also connected to our gut, okay? Which is why we get the sayings, things like, you know, oh, that was gut-wrenching, or I have butterflies in my stomach, or you may be sick to my stomach, and, you know, my favorite, you give me the shits. Because when we're stressed, we release adrenaline, right? Fight, flight, freeze, that sort of autonomic arousal that tries to protect us from danger or to prevent any danger. But it also releases other chemicals and hormones. And there's a hormone called corticotropin releasing factor, or CRF for short. And CRF does three things. It increases the sensitivity of the gut. It delays gastric emptying, which is associated with nausea. And it influences bowel movements or bowel motility. Usually it tends to be more diarrhea, hence, you know, it gives me the shits. But, you know, this constant information going up and down between the brain and gut all the time. And a lot of it, most of the time, is beyond our conscious awareness.
Wow. Yeah, it's absolutely fascinating. So obviously in your practice, you're working on that area. Can you talk to us a little bit about gut-directed hypnotherapy and what it is and how you're integrating all that knowledge into your practice?
Sure. Well, look, we get individuals who come in with symptoms, you know, pain, abdominal pain, bloating, as I said, alterations in bowel movements, diarrhea, constipation. And, you know, because it creates so much stress and distress, because it's uncomfortable, right? And if you've got diarrhea predominant IBS, what that means is you've got severe diarrhea. It affects your quality of life. You can't go out. You know, if you're going out, like if I can't find a toilet. So there's a lot of anxiety associated with it. So my key role, and one of the things I tell my clients is, if I was to summarize it in a sentence, my job is to help you forget about your gut. Okay. Now, that means reducing anxiety around it, so you're not thinking about it and focusing on it, but also to help by reducing the sensitivity of the gut. Because it's an over, we call it visceral hypersensitivity. That is the big sort of underlying factor in individuals that have irritable bowel syndrome or IBS. Okay. So hypnotherapy, and I think it's important that, again, that I talk about, I'll start off by talking about, you know, what some of the definitions are, I guess, for hypnotherapy, just so people have a bit of clarity, because there's a lot of misunderstanding. Now, the definition I give for hypnotherapy is that hypnosis is a natural altered state of consciousness, like a trance state, that is achieved through natural processes, obviously not involving the ingestion of any substance or physical triggers. That's the definition. A simplified way of referring to it or explaining it is, when we are in this trance state, we're better able to absorb information. So we're more open to suggestions, okay? So if you're thinking about, if I'm in this relaxed state or trance state, because you don't have to be relaxed, you're in this trance state, suggestions that I am receiving, say from the psychologist, are being absorbed and learned and then communicated to the body or through the gut, through the intestinal tract. So essentially, that's what gut-directed hypnotherapy is. It is a sort of a state where, you know, that involves sort of targeted verbal suggestions and therapeutic imagery to encourage improvement in symptoms, for example, reduction in pain or perception of pain or even the attention to the pain, and also reducing the sensitivity and therefore the irritability of the gut. That's sort of the easiest way to explain what gut-directed hypnotherapy is. Gut-directed hypnotherapy, and again, I'm going on about this because it's really important. Just because you're getting a reduction in symptoms, it still does not mean that it's all in your head or that anxiety is the cause. Now, we don't know how gut-directed hypnotherapy works. All right. Science hasn't been able to explain it. The way I sort of comfort my clients about that uncertainty is to say, you know, science doesn't know how the brain says to pick up a pen. Okay, there's still so much science doesn't know. In fact, still the two frontiers that science still doesn't know that much about is the brain and the gut. And they kind of, it's fascinating they come from the same part of the body and they're so strongly intrinsically linked. Now, we don't know how it works. Now, what we do know is that it has a direct effect on the body. And it does this in different ways. One, it reduces the sensitivity of the gut. How do they test this, you might ask? Well, let's just do the example of people that have what we call irritable bowel syndrome. So their bowels, the gut is basically irritable. Now, what they did is that they inflated a balloon into the rectum in these individuals. And people that had IBS experienced pain and discomfort at a greater degree at a smaller dilation compared to the normal population. So basically, for people that didn't have IBS, you could inflate that balloon to a greater degree or a greater volume before they started experiencing pain or discomfort. Post-hypnotherapy, those people with IBS were able to tolerate that discomfort and they were able to inflate that balloon to a greater degree, hence a reduction in sensitivity. Hypnotherapy has been found to increase gastric emptying, so the rate that your stomach empties. It's been found to influence motility and bowel movements. So people that have very spasmodic rapid transit like diarrhea slows it down. And people that have slow transit speeds it up. Because now, remember, bowels involve nerves, right? In terms of bowel movements, contract, relax, peristalsis, and that all occurs through the nervous system. Now, and finally, pain. Pain is not experienced in your body, it's interpreted in your brain. So there's a pain center in the brain called the anterior cingulate cortex or the dorsal anterior cingulate cortex. And it's that center in the brain that interprets pain as pain. Now, people that have IBS have a very sensitive anterior cingulate cortex. So basically using what we call functional MRI, it shows up brighter, showing overactivity or a sensitivity. So it's over amplifying signals that it's getting from the gut, right? Post-hypnotherapy, there was a reduction in that signal using MRI and therefore a reduction in pain. So, gut-directed hypnotherapy is targeting the body. It is targeting the brain. It's not stress and anxiety per se, but it does actually have an effect on the neuromotility of the gut. So I think that's important for people to know because people hear gut-directed hypnotherapy and they think, oh, but this is a real physical condition. This isn't all in my head. And we don't think it is. We don't think it's all in their head. IBS, or irritable bowel syndrome, used to be classified as a functional gut disorder. Okay? It's now, and I'll explain what that means. Now it's been reclassified in the medical literature and is defined as a disorder of gut-brain interactions. So when I explain to my patients and they come in and like, oh, I don't know what to expect, I'm a bit uncertain, this isn't all in my head, et cetera, et cetera. This is a physical problem. And I say, well, yes, let me explain to you what IBS is. So a patient's got symptoms, right? They'll get the medical tests, they might have a colonoscopy or a gastroscopy to basically exclude any dangerous or potentially threatening organic disease, like inflammatory bowel disease, cancer, et cetera, et cetera. And when that comes up clear, then it's usually, based on symptoms, they're usually classified as a functional gut disorder or disorders of gut-brain interactions. Now, the way I explain functional gut disorders to my patients is, just imagine you've got a computer and your computer is not working, right? Now, we've all had this experience. And just say now we pulled apart the computer, we pull out the microchips, and I'm not a techie person, so I wouldn't even know what to call them. We're checking out the CPU, we're checking everything, and it's normal. There's no problem with the hardware. That's because it's a problem with Google. It's a software problem. It's a communication problem. Okay? That's what IBS is. And this is not me saying it. This is what it is in modern medicine today through all the research studies. That's what it's classified as. Okay? So hypnotherapy helps to reduce the sensitivity of the gut, as I said, but it also helps to reduce the anxiety that's associated with the gut. So we're working on both things.
Hey guys, quick interruption to the podcast so I can give a quick plug to one of my OG partners in the fight game, TikTok Nutrition. If you follow the work I do outside of this podcast, you would know that TikTok Nutrition is my go-to meal prep partner. He has supported me and my athletes since I started TFD all those years ago. He's supported fighters of mine right from the regional scene up to my UFC world champs. He also looks after athletes in the NRL, Super Rugby, Ironman series, as well as countless gyms up and down the East Coast. But his meals aren't just for athletes. They're suited for office workers, nurses, and labourers. Basically, everyone can benefit from getting a bit of TikTok in their life. He's been nice enough to give all of my listeners a sneaky 10% off with code TFD10. Just apply that at checkout and you'll be good to go. All right, back to the show. Absolutely. And that's fascinating. Dr. Jim, that's fascinating. I think anyone who has worked with patients who have had IBS, I remember this is many moons ago before I went to my specialty in performance nutrition. We were always told IBS is almost the thing that you tell your patient when you don't really have a good explanation of how to explain what's going on in their gut. You call it IBS. And like you said, these guys undergo so much stress and anxiety, whether it's stress and anxiety, but just going out or things that you and I might take for granted, you know, like a trip to the shops, that's 20 minutes in the car. That can cause a lot of stress and anxiety for these people purely because of their bowel motions and things like that. So it's extremely interesting. Hey, Dr. Jim, are these patients that are coming to you, have they tried other methods, say like low FODMAPs or other things like that, and they just haven't seen the success with it? And then they go, okay, this is probably something else that I need to explore.
Absolutely. Now, again, it depends. Like when a patient, you know, the low FODMAP diet is, there are so many studies looking at the low FODMAP diet. There's one study that compared the low FODMAP diet to the gut-directed hypnotherapy and didn't find any significant difference. They were equally effective. Now, if you look at the research studies out there looking at gut-directed hypnotherapy and low FODMAP diet, they're about the same. They're about 70 to 80% effective in terms of, you know, 70 to 80% of individuals experience a significant reduction in symptoms. So they're both the same. They're not different. Now, when a patient comes in to see the gastroenterologist or their doctor, I guess it depends on the patient in terms of where they will get referred. If they sort of say, I eat these foods, and as soon as I eat these foods, I experience pain and symptoms, then they are more likely to, I guess, take on board that, you know, that the diet's going to help. The diet is the cause. And if the diet's the cause, then if I fix the diet, then I fix the cause, and therefore I don't have any problem, right? So those individuals are more likely to try the low FODMAP diet. And again, you know, we work very closely with dietitians. If they go and see a gastroenterologist and they say, then, you know, look, you know, I don't notice any difference with foods, but, you know, stress is really affecting, every time I get stressed, it's affecting my gut, then the doctor might think, you know, have you thought about this particular treatment, like, you know, psychological therapies or like gut-directed hypnotherapy? So that might make that suggestion, and that patient would be more open to trying this treatment. I guess, you know, because people misunderstand what we do in terms of psychogastroenterology, they think that we think that it's all in their head. So they've got these symptoms and they go, well, no, I'm not going to see a psychologist because this isn't all in my head. This is a physical problem. And therefore, it has to be a physical treatment like diet. So unfortunately, you know, we get patients that have tried absolutely everything. So we're almost like the last line of defense. And perhaps we shouldn't be. And I'm not saying that, you know, we are better than a low FODMAP diet at all. I think treatment should be individualized, like I explained it, in terms of the doctor should be asking and can be asking more of these questions to find out what's going on and therefore tailor the treatment to the individual. And if that doesn't help, there is gut-directed therapy. And if we're doing gut-directed therapy and it doesn't really help, then we'll refer to our colleagues who are dietitians or physios or whatever it might be. So, you know, that's how it sits in comparison. But yes, to answer your question, yeah, we do tend to be the last line of defense where people have tried absolutely everything else, and they're coming going, you know, you're my last hope. And I don't know what I'm going to do if this doesn't work. So I've tried everything else. And, you know, people who have had these conditions have really suffered. Like the stories that we hear, people have just been isolated at home for, you know, years. But to go back to your question earlier, in terms of, you know, they do all the tests and it's like, well, we don't know what it is. We'll call it IBS. That's been really unfortunate. And that's how it used to be. And it's taking a bit of time now to change it. IBS is a disorder, as we said. It's not an exclusion diagnosis. It is actually a diagnosis. But it's a diagnosis based on symptoms. not on organic pathology. Okay, that's the important thing people should know. And, you know, a lot of people feel like they're just being, you know, IBS and they're being pushed out, you know, they're being pushed away basically going, you know, this is not really a problem, or, you know, there's nothing wrong with you, which is what, you know, patients used to be told in the past. And some, I'm sure, are still being told there's nothing wrong with you. And people feel stigmatized and so forth because of that. But yeah, that's changing because it is a diagnosis. But again, it's a software problem. It's not a hardware problem. And that's the distinction.
Absolutely. Dr. Jim, I think that's a good segue. Say if someone's, they've gone through this and then they've come to you and they say, hey, Dr. Jim, I really want your help. I want to do this. I don't want you to give away too many of your secrets. And I appreciate that with most things with health, it's a very individualized approach. For those who may not be familiar, what does a session look like with you? If someone came in, they sat down, what are they going through? What are you taking them through?
Well, look, that's a really good question. There's no secrets. I mean, we are psychologists. So the very first thing that we do is we carry out an assessment. So, you know, we try and find out as much as we can about the individual. We're talking about a complete history, obviously about their gut history in terms of their health tests, et cetera. But everything, we look at medical history, look at mental health history, look at developmental history, we look at all those things to try and create an understanding of what we think is going on in terms of the problem, in terms of what's contributing to the software problem, but also what's maintaining the problem. And, you know, gut-directed hypnotherapy is just one of those tools. It's not everything that we do. We use cognitive behavioral therapy. We use mindfulness-based therapies. You know, sometimes we combine CBT with gut-directed hypnotherapy. It depends on what the individual, you know, what the individual needs. So the typical session after that is we have obviously a discussion of what we think is going to be the most appropriate treatment. And sometimes patients just want hypnotherapy, and that's what we do, and that's fine. But most of the time, again, we sort of do both. The session really involves, you know, again, destigmatizing hypnotherapy. You know, we reinforce, and I didn't mention this earlier, but hypnotherapy is not about losing control. You know, I joke with my clients and I say, look, you know, you're not gonna see any fairies, there's no pixies, there's no leprechauns, there's no chicken dancing. And you know, that helps to lighten the mood up a little bit so people don't feel so threatened. There's no loss of control. You know, I said, you know, this is just when you're relaxed, like you're relaxed at home, wherever you might be. When we're more relaxed or more focused, which is another way of sort of defining trance state, we're better able to absorb information. And that's all it is. So there's no loss of control. This is not stage hypnosis. We don't do regression. You know, we don't need to go back into people's pasts to, you know, find the cause of the problem. And even that, there's no real evidence to say that that's the reason why people have these problems. But so... And we explain what it is, of course, and then we get started and we do the hypnotherapy. So we're always up front and we're always explaining, you know, what we're going to do. There's no surprises in here. And then we do the trance state and then we get them to come in. Again, the gut-directed hypnotherapy, we do about 4 to 6 sessions, which is what the research sort of shows is sort of usually enough for people to experience a significant reduction in symptoms. So, and that's pretty much, and they're given a recording to take home and practice, and that reinforces the work that we do in session. So that's essentially what it is. I mean, patients are just required to listen to the recording every day, given some other exercises, but it's a very simple treatment.
Is there, again, I don't want to feel like I'm intruding and asking too much information, but is there a way that you guys prefer to get them into that trance state? Is it, say, through speech, or is it through music, or is it individualized? Or
yeah, there's many different ways of inducing a trance state or a hypnotic state. You know, the old clock, you know, they have the old clock where you swing the watch, that actually works. There's many different ways of being hypnotized. We tend to just use a very simple approach, which is a guided relaxation. Okay. So we use a guided relaxation to induce the trance state. And the reason why we do that is most of the research uses this method. And so we just stick with what the research is. But we're also teaching patients or individuals how to relax by doing this muscle relaxation. But there's many different ways of hypnotizing. Absolutely, as you said, I mean, there's sort of swirly, swirly things that you can look at, you know, to the clock. What we call arm catalepsy, arm levitation. There's many different ways of inducing trance, but you know, and they're kind of novel sort of ways of inducing trance. But we just do a guided relaxation and we find that to be really effective.
Is it much different, Dr. Jim, say the trance state to say the state you're in, say when you're meditating or in you're in an extremely relaxed space like that? Is there that difference or is that what you're aiming to get into?
It's a common question that we get. They're kind of similar, but they're not. Meditation sort of involves, and I suppose you can have guided meditation, and sometimes guided meditation can be like a hypnotherapy sort of state or a hypnotherapeutic state, but they're slightly different. Meditation or self-meditation tends to be self-guided. So if you look at sort of, and I didn't explain to you this before about the conscious and unconscious mind, which I can talk about, but you don't go into a very deeply relaxed state of consciousness or unconsciousness, subconscious mind, when you're doing a meditation. And I'm sure there's people that who are experienced meditators that probably can get into that induced sort of deep, you know, altered state of consciousness. But it's a little different. And there are a lot of techniques that you do with hypnotherapy as a way of sort of getting them into that trance state that's a little different to meditation. We do also use what we call mindfulness-based therapies, which do involve meditation exercises. Sorry, my computer dipped over. And the research also shows that these treatments are also effective in reducing the symptoms of IBS or functional gut disorders. So, you know, straight meditation on its own, I don't think is as effective. More of the mindfulness-based studies show promise in terms of it being efficacious. But again, hypnotherapy is a little different. It is a little different. People go into a really deeply relaxed state very quickly in a very short period of time.
And you said, Dr. Jim, that you make it pretty clear with your patients that you're not going to make them do a chicken dance. And I think that is the immediate response. Like you think of people going up on stage and you see all these things.
Yeah.
But obviously there's some rhyme and reason with what you do and say to these patients once they're in that trance state. Is there particular methods that you go about taking them through depending on what you're trying to treat, or how does that work?
Well, look, there's a few different ways of doing the hypnotherapy. One is obviously, you know, when they're in this induced state or this trance state or this altered state of consciousness, when they're more receptive to suggestions, then, you know, throughout the treatment, we might talk about their gut feeling better, feeling more comfortable. We might say things like, you know, no longer pain, or your gut will no longer bother you anymore, or you'll hardly be aware of your gut. But it also involves a guided visualization exercise or a metaphor that helps to sort of explain normal digestive system functioning. So, and that can vary from session to session, from patient to patient. For example, a common one, one of the original metaphors that was used out of Manchester was imagining your gut like a river, sort of flowing through a countryside, you know, picturing a calm, gentle, rhythmic flow of the water, no rushing, no hurrying. So we do use visualization as well as targeted specific suggestions to the symptoms that they're experiencing or to the distress that they're experiencing as a result of these gut symptoms.
Yeah, absolutely. It's absolutely fascinating. Now, you touched on it a little bit there, but I want to ask you about gut health and the relationship with mental health. And you said that a lot of the time it doesn't necessarily, you're not digging for these things that have brought on this, say, gut distress or whatever, but can you explain what the link is between the health of our gut and then our mental health?
Well, look, in terms of most of the work that I deal with is, again, of how the brain affects the gut. And, you know, there's some research, and I'll talk about that in a moment. There's research now coming out, of course, and most people hear about it because it's so fascinating, and that's about the gut microbiota or the gut bacteria. And, you know, there's research coming out that suggests that the gut microbiota influences our mental state. And, you know, and there probably is something there. And I'm certainly not saying that that's not the case. But, I think there still needs to be more studies that look at it. I mean, they're talking about everything from the gut bacteria to contribute to depression or anxiety to there's some suggestion around autism. There's some suggestion around obesity. But I still think there needs to be more research in that area. A lot of the studies are still based on rats at this point in time. So I think we've got to be careful when we look at rat studies because they don't always translate to humans. And I think that, you know, I think science and everyone gets excited about like finding, you know, sort of causation. And therefore, you know, we can pop a pill or we can take a psychobiotic, which is like, you know, a probiotic that, you know, affects mental health. But, you know, the research in it is still very early, and it's there's no real strong evidence that I'm aware of, unless something recently has changed, that gives it a lot of, really strong credibility from a research perspective yet. In terms of the brain affecting the gut, in terms of, there's so many research studies out there. I just couldn't tell you how many there are. But, you know, what we do know in terms of that through the brain-gut interaction is that we know stress or anxiety exacerbates symptoms. We know that the anxiety and low mood, like depression, is associated with poor outcomes. So people that have anxiety and depression are more likely to continue to have gut problems and therefore more anxiety and depression as a result of that. But, you know, remember, stress and anxiety are not cause. They further irritate a sensitive gut. They make their gut more sensitive through the brain-gut axis, through the release of corticotropin releasing factor that I said earlier. What's really interesting is that from a research perspective, what the research shows, there's this model called the model of the pathophysiology of these functional gut disorders or disorders of gut brain interactions. Essentially, why does someone develop IBS? And this is what the research says according to this model. There's a genetic link. So we think that people who have IBS have a genetic component to it. So they're genetically predisposed. So they're slightly more likely or more likely to develop IBS than someone who doesn't have that vulnerability. And what this model sort of says is that as time goes on, early childhood stresses, abuse history, and other precipitating factors result in an increased sensitive gut, or they're more likely to develop what we call the visceral hypersensitivity. And, you know, you look at it from the perspective of a tipping point. And, you know, we see a lot of patients that have what we call post-infectious IBS. So they get a tummy bug and they just never recover again. And, you know, and so they get these really huge symptoms. They're really struggling to get it in control. They're getting anxious and stressed. And the anxiety that's associated with these symptoms maintains the factor. You're going to think about these FODMAP foods. And let's talk about the FODMAP foods for a moment. Now, FODMAP foods, and this might surprise people, FODMAP foods are not the cause of IBS, okay? FODMAP foods are the sandpaper on sunburn. It's the sunburn. A lot of people get malabsorption, fermentation in their gut from foods that they eat causing gas and distension. But they might just get like mild symptoms like, oh, I feel a bit full, you know, that didn't agree with me so much or whatnot. But the symptoms are very mild and they're not too distressing. But if you have a sensitive gut, and again, from that perspective of the sensitive anterior cingulate cortex, you're going to over-amplify those signals and you're going to experience more pain. So that's sort of the role of how stress plays a role. It plays a role in triggering symptoms, and it's a problem in maintaining the factor because the more, let me explain to you so you get a picture of it. Let's just say I've got a gut problem. I've got really bad pain. Now, this really bad pain causes me distress. I don't want it. It's affecting my ability to go to work, to function, to socialize, whether it's diarrhea, whether it's bloody, whatever it might be. Now, because I'm so distressed by it, what's going to happen? I'm going to become hypervigilant. I'm going to perceive it as a threat. So if I'm perceiving this as a threat, I'm going to be checking. I'm going to be hypervigilant. I'm going to be what we call somatically focused. I'm going to be anxious about it. Anxiety releases stress and anxiety that the hypervigilance releases adrenaline. It releases corticotropin releasing factor. That corticotropin releasing factor increases sensitivity to the gut, allows gastric emptying, influences motility, and contributes to the gut problem. So you're going round in circles. Can you get a picture of that?
Yeah, absolutely. Sense? Yeah, yeah.
So sometimes the thing that causes the gut problem is not the same thing that maintains it. And we find that stress and anxiety around the gut problem is one of the maintaining factors. Probably in the majority of our patients.
Right. So it's almost as if it's a band-aid approach, which happens a lot in health sciences, where people try to put blame on, say, the FODMAP foods and really address the cut, not the band-aid.
Well, yeah, I kind of think it is. And look, the low FODMAP diet, it works, right? It's a really great diet. It's probably the most effective diet. I think it is the most effective diet from a research perspective. than any other diet for IBS or for functional gut disorders. But what the low FODMAP diet does, and I'm not a dietitian, so you know, I'm apologizing if I get this wrong to any dietitians that might be listening to you who specialize in low FODMAP. But and I've got my podcast actually where I talk about this, my podcast Talking Gut, where I've actually interviewed, and I know Peter Gibson, Professor Peter Gibson, and he was the gastroenterologist who developed the treatment of the low FODMAP diet with him and his team. So I've interviewed him, and you know, everything I'm basically saying is something that he validates around the low FODMAP diet. So if you want more information on it, you can listen to that. But essentially what it is and what the premise was to reduce those foods that were sandpaper foods, if you like. Now, if we use the example of using the visual hypersensitivity as sunburn and the sandpaper, the foods as sandpaper, if we remove that sandpaper, give the gut a chance to sort of heal, if we use that, as an example, like the sunburn to sort of heal itself over. Now, visual hypersensitivity does not mean inflamed. And I really want to make that clear, because a lot of people think that there's inflammation in there and the research isn't that promising. There's some research looking at microscopic inflammation, but again, it doesn't explain the amount of symptoms people experience. But anyway, side note. So we remove the sandpaper and we give it some time, and then we slowly start to reintroduce that sandpaper. It might be a finer grade of sandpaper, so smaller amounts, or less exposure. So you're not having sandpaper all the time. You're having small amounts. So you can actually have a really good quality of life, and you're still able to eat those foods that are good for your gut bacteria but have been causing you symptoms in the past. I'll give you another example, and this is an example I give my patients. It's the irritable gut. You know, the irritable gut or a sensitive gut, it's like being a worker. So you're at work and, you know, your boss comes up to you and says, hey, you know, how's the project going? Have you finished it? And you just snap at him like, what the hell? Do you know why? You know, I'm working my butt off and this is really hard. So you're overreacting to just the suggestion that your boss said. So then you go, oh man, you know, I just can't tolerate it. It's so irritable. I'm going to go on holidays. So you go on holidays, right? You spend a month overseas and you're having a good time or whatnot. And then you come back to work and then your boss comes up and says, how's that project going? You go, oh yeah, I'll get back to it. I'm less sensitive. I'm less irritable. And therefore I'm able to see and interpret the messages that I'm getting from him in an appropriate way and not overreacting. So it's kind of the same way that the food affects the gut.
Yeah, it's absolutely phenomenal. Hey, and I think you could talk about it for hours, but I am mindful of our time. And you've got my brain racing a million miles an hour right now. But for say, if we did want to get some more research and we wanted to read more about psychogastroenterology, what are some good resources or some good books? Or you've obviously got the podcast. Can you point us towards some resources we could go to?
That's a really good point. And I think I should have mentioned that earlier. This area of psychogastroenterology, there's no specific course that you can do. So what that means is all of my team here have all been trained by me, and my learning has come from obviously Manchester, from my colleagues in the States, and just doing a whole stack of research, spending time in the hospitals with gastroenterologists. And it's been really bit by bit learning over, you know, 13 years. So there hasn't been any, there's no particular treatment, training in this area. Majority of sort of learnings come from research articles. That's the majority of learning. Now, there is a book, I'm just trying to find Psychogastroenterology for Adults. And it's by Knowles, McCoca Wallace, and Laurie Kiefer in New York. So it's a handbook for mental health professionals. And essentially covers, it's probably the best resource that you can get. Where they've got, you know, they've sort of, there's multiple chapters, multiple authors, most of them I know, and a lot of my researchers, that basically explain a lot of the things that I basically discuss. It doesn't cover everything, and this might be the first volume of the book, but it does sort of give you a sort of a one package, one book sort of summary. I guess of the majority of things that we've talked about, it's probably the best resource for this area. Otherwise, you really do need to sort of You know, do a lot of searching through the literature, through research articles, and you know, some you can get online for free, some you can't.
Yeah, absolutely. And say, Dr. Jim, if someone was listening to this and they go, hey, you know what, Dr. Jim sounds like he could solve the problem I'm having, what's the best way for them to get in contact with you?
Well, in terms of with me, they can contact via our, obviously, the social media, which is our Twitter is at the Gut Center. We have Instagram, we have Facebook. Or they can drop us an email at info@thegutcenter.com, or they can call us on a number, which is 1300-488-287. And our head office is here in Melbourne, but we are also in Brisbane and also in Sydney. We have an office in Sydney as well. And now with COVID-19, obviously, we're doing a lot more telehealth now. And, you know, the research shows that telehealth is a really effective sort of medium for gut-directed hypotherapy. So, you know, patients can still benefit from this treatment online as well. But they're probably the main things. I mean, if people want to contact me directly, they can contact me on my email address, which is jimk@thegutcenter.com.
Absolutely. All right. Well, Dr. Jim, thanks so much for taking the time. I know you're super busy, and I always appreciate you guys taking an hour out of your day to have a chat, but that was extremely informative, extremely interesting, and I really do appreciate you taking the time.
My absolute pleasure. I love talking about it. So thank you again for the invitation.
All right, Dr. Jim, no doubt I'll chat to you soon.
Thanks, man. Bye.
And there it is, another episode of the Fight Science Podcast. As Dr. Jim said, the area of gut health is such an exciting and emerging area, and his work just goes to show how much more we have to learn about this area. Be sure to follow him on socials to keep up to date with his work. This podcast will be available through the podcast app, iTunes, Spotify, and you'll also be able to download it from my website, www.thefightdietitian.com/podcast. If you enjoy listening to the podcast, then be sure to head to the podcast app to give us a rating and leave us a review. Thanks for listening in, and I'll see you guys for the next episode of the Fight Science Podcast.